und von Microsoft Gründer Gates. Insgesamt seien auf der CD 80.000 DIN A4 Seiten gespeichert.
William Burroughs. Cities of the Red Knight. The liberal principles embodied in the French and American revolutions and later in the liberal revolutions of 1848 had already been codified and put into practice by pirate communes 100 years earlier. Here is a quote from Under the Black Flag by Don C. Seitz. Captain Mission was one of the forebears of the French Revolution. He was 100 years in advance of his time, for his career was based upon an initial desire to better adjust the affairs of mankind, which ended as is quite usual in the more liberal adjustment of his own fortunes. It is related how Captain Mission, having led his ship to victory against an English man of war, called a meeting of the crew. Those who wished to follow him he would welcome and treat as brothers, those who did not would be safely put ashore. One and all embraced the new freedom. Some were for hoisting the black flag at once, but Mission demurred, saying that they were not pirates but liberty lovers, fighting for equal rights against all nations subject to the tyranny of government, and bespoke a white flag as the more fitting emblem. The ship's money was put in a chest to be used as common property. Clothes were now distributed to all in need, and the Republic of the Sea was in full operation. Mission bespoke them to live in strict harmony among themselves, that a misplaced society would adjudge them still as pirates. Self-preservation, therefore, and a cruel disposition, compelled them to declare war on all nations who should close their ports to them. I declare such war, and at the same time recommend to you a humane and generous behavior towards your prisoners, which will appear by so much more the effects of a noble soul, and as we are satisfied we should not meet the same treatment should our ill fortune or want of courage give us up to their mercy. The Nieuwstad of Amsterdam was made prize, giving up £2,000 and gold dust and 17 slaves. The slaves were added to the crew and clothed in the Dutchman's spare garments. Mission made an address denouncing slavery, holding that men who sold others like beasts proved their religion to be no more than a grimace, as no man had power of liberty over another. Mission explored the Madagascar coast and found a bay 10 leagues north of Diego Sarez. It was resolved to establish here the shore quarters of the Republic, erect a town, build docks, and have a place they might call their own. The colony was called Libertadia and was placed under articles drawn up by Captain Mission. The articles state, among other things, all decisions with regard to the colony to be submitted to vote by the colonists, the abolition of the death penalty, and freedom to follow any religious beliefs or practices without sanction or molestation. Captain Mission's colony, which numbered about 300, was wiped out by a surprise attack from the natives, and Captain Mission was killed shortly afterwards in a sea battle. There were other such colonies in the West Indies and in Central and South America, but they were not able to maintain themselves since they were not sufficiently populous to withstand attack. Had they been able to do so, the history of the world could have been altered. Imagine a number of such fortified positions all through South America and the West Indies, stretching from Africa to Madagascar and the East Indies, all offering refuge to fugitives from slavery and oppression. Come to us and live under the articles. At once we have allies in all those who are enslaved and oppressed throughout the world, from the cotton plantations of the American South to the sugar plantations of the West Indies, and the whole Indian population of the American continent peonized and degraded by the Spanish into subhuman poverty and ignorance, exterminated by the Americans, infected with their vices and diseases, the natives of Africa and Asia, all these are potential allies. Fortified positions supported by and supporting guerrilla hit and run bands, supplied with soldiers, weapons, medicines, and information by the local populations, such a combination would be unbeatable. If the whole American army couldn't beat the Viet Cong at a time when fortified positions were rendered obsolete by artillery and air strikes, certainly the armies of Europe, operating in unfamiliar territory and susceptible to all the disabling diseases of tropical countries, could not have beaten guerrilla tactics plus fortified positions. Consider the difficulties which such an invading army would face: continual harassment from the guerrillas, a totally hostile population always ready with poison, misdirection, snakes and spiders in the general's bed, armadillos carrying the deadly earth-eating disease rooting under the barracks and adopted as mascots by the regiment as dysentery and malaria take their toll. The sieges could not but present a series of military disasters. There is no stopping the articulated. The white man is retroactively relieved of his burden. Whites will be welcomed as workers, settlers, teachers, and technicians, but not as colonists or masters. No man may violate the articles. Imagine such a movement on a worldwide scale. Faced by the actual practice of freedom, the French and American revolutions would be forced to stand by their words. The disastrous results of uncontrolled industrialization would also be curtailed, since factory workers and slum dwellers from the cities would seek refuge in articulated areas. Any man would have the right to settle in any area of his choosing. The land would belong to those who used it. No white man boss, no pukka sahib, no patrons, no colonists. The escalation of mass production and concentration of population in urban areas would be halted, for who would work in their factories and buy their products when he could live from the fields and the sea and the lakes and the rivers in areas of unbelievable plenty? And living from the land, he would be motivated to preserve its resources. I cite this example of retroactive utopia since it actually could have happened in terms of the techniques and human resources available at the time. Had Captain Mission lived long enough to set an example for others to follow, mankind might have stepped free from the deadly impasse of insoluble problems in which we now find ourselves. The chance was there. The chance was missed. The principles of the French and American revolutions became windy lies in the mouths of politicians. The liberal revolutions of 1848 created the so-called republics of Central and South America, with a dreary history of dictatorship, oppression, graft, and bureaucracy, thus closing this vast, underpopulated continent to any possibility of communes along the lines set forth by Captain Mission. In any case, South America will soon be crisscrossed by highways and motels. In England, Western Europe, and America, the overpopulation made possible by the Industrial Revolution leaves scant room for communes, which are commonly subject to state and federal law and frequently harassed by the local inhabitants. There is simply no room left for freedom from the tyranny of government, since city dwellers depend on it for food, power, water, transportation, protection, and welfare. Your right to live where you want, with companions of your choosing, under laws to which you agree, died in the 18th century with Captain Mission. Only a miracle or a disaster could restore it. Invocation. This book is dedicated to the Ancient Ones, to the Lord of Abominations, Humwurwa, whose face is a mass of entrails, whose breath is the stench of dung and the perfume of death, dark angel of all that is excreted and sours, lord of decay, lord of the future, who rides on a whispering south wind, to Pazuzu, lord of fevers and plagues, dark angel of the four winds with rotting genitals from which he howls through sharpened teeth over stricken cities, to Kuchalu, the sleeping serpent who cannot be summoned, to the Akharu, who suck the blood of men since they desire to become men, to the Laasu, who haunt the places of men, to Galal and Lilith, who invade the beds of men and whose children are born in secret places, to Adu, raiser of storms who can fill the night sky with brightness, to Mala, lord of courage and bravery, to Zagarim, whose number is 23 and who kills in an unnatural fashion, to Zarim, a warrior among warriors, to Itzamna, spirit of early mists and showers. To Nine Chel, the spider web that catches the dew of morning, to Zuwikak, virgin fire, to Ajiz, the master of cold, to Kaku Pocket, who works in fire, to Nine Tab, goddess of ropes and snares, patroness of those who hang themselves, to Shmuin, the silent one, twin brother of Nine Tab, to Kolital the unformed, lord of rebirth, to Aguchi, master of ejaculations, to Osiris and Amen in phallic form, to Hex Chun Chan, the dangerous one, to Apuk, the destroyer, to the great old one and the star beast, to Pen, god of panic, to the nameless gods of dispersal and emptiness, to Hassan Isabah, master of assassins, to all the scribes and artists and practitioners of magic through whom these spirits have been manifested. Nothing is true. Everything is permitted. Book 1. The Health Officer. September 13, 1923. Farnsworth, the district health officer, was a man so grudging in what he asked of life that every win was a loss, yet he was not without a certain plodding persistence of effort and effectiveness in his limited area. The current emergency posed by the floods and the attendant cholera epidemic, while it did not spur him to any unusual activity, left him unruffled. Every morning at sunrise, he bundled his greasy maps which he studied at breakfast while he licked butter off his fingers into his battered Land Rover and set out to inspect his district, stopping here and there to order more sandbags for the levees, knowing his orders would be disregarded, as they generally were unless the commissioner happened to be with him. He ordered three bystanders, presumably relatives, to transport a cholera case to the district hospital at Wakdas and left 3 opium pills and instructions for preparing rice water. They nodded, and he drove on, having done what he could. The emergency hospital at Wakdas was installed in an empty army barracks left over from the war. It was understaffed and overcrowded, mostly by patients who lived near enough and were still strong enough to walk. The treatment for cholera was simple. Each patient was assigned to a straw pallet on arrival and given a gallon of rice water and half a gram of opium. If he was still alive 12 hours later, the dose of opium was repeated. The survival rate was about 20%. Pallets of the dead were washed in carbolic solution and left in the sun to dry. The attendants were mostly Chinese who had taken the job because they were allowed to smoke opium and feed the ash to the patients. The smell of cooking rice, opium smoke, excrement and carbolic permeated the hospital and the area around it for several hundred yards. At 10 o'clock the health officer entered the hospital. He requisitioned more carbolic and opium, and sent off another request for a doctor, which he expected and hoped would be ignored. He felt that a doctor fussing around the hospital would only make matters worse. He might even object to the opium dosage as too high, or attempt to interfere with the opium smoking of the attendants. The health officer had very little use for doctors. They simply complicated things to make themselves important. After spending half an hour in the hospital, he drove to Gaddi's to see the commissioner, who invited him to lunch. He accepted without enthusiasm, declining a gin before lunch and a beer with lunch. He picked at the rice and fish, and ate a small plate of stewed fruit. He was trying to persuade the commissioner to assign some convicts to work on the levees. "Sorry, old boy, not enough soldiers to guard them." "Well, it's a serious situation." "Dare say." Farnsworth did not press the point. He simply did what he could and let it go at that. Newcomers to the district wondered what kept him going at all. Old-timers like the commissioner knew. For the health officer had a sustaining vice. Every morning at sunrise, he brewed a pot of strong tea and washed down a gram of opium. When he returned from his rounds in the evening, he repeated the dose and gave it time to take effect before he prepared his evening meal of stewed fruit and wheat bread. He had no permanent house boy, since he feared a boy might steal his opium. Twice a week he had a boy in to clean the bungalow, and then he locked his opium up in an old rusty safe where he kept his reports. He had been taking opium for 5 years and had stabilized his dosage after the first year and never increased it, nor gone on to injections of morphine. This was not due to strength of character, but simply to the fact that he felt he owed himself very little, and that was what he allotted himself. Driving back to find the sandbags not there, the cholera patient dead, and his 3 relatives droopy-eyed from the opium pills he had left, he felt neither anger nor exasperation, only the slight lack that had increased in the last hour of his drive, so that he stepped harder on the accelerator. Arriving at his bungalow, he washed down an opium pill with bottled water and lit the kerosene stove for his tea. He carried the tea onto the porch and by the time he had finished the second cup, he was feeling the opium wash through the back of his neck and down his withered thighs. He could have passed for 50, actually he was 28. He sat there for half an hour looking at the muddy river and the low hills covered with scrub. There was a mutter of thunder, and as he cooked his evening meal the first drops of rain fell on the rusty galvanized iron roof. He awoke to the unaccustomed sound of lapping water. Hastily he pulled on his pants and stepped onto the porch. Rain was still falling, and the water had risen during the night to a level of 12 inches under the bungalow and a few inches below the hubcaps of his Land Rover. He washed down an opium pill and put water on the stove for his tea. Then he dusted off an alligator skin.
Ask the Dust.
Velkommen til det her afsnit af Ask the Dust, som i aften kommer til at være dels på dansk, men dels også med min gode ven, Tine. Og vi har igennem en del år arbejdet på at skulle lave noget med noget renaissancemusik.
Ja.
Og nu blev det tid.
Ja, nu er du taget til Amager for at mødes med støvet, som i dag er mig.
Ja.
Ja.
Vi skal simpelthen kigge ind i datidens støvede kikkert, og kigge på nogle bangers fra gamle dage.
Ja, og jeg tror, den her liste, Claus, faktisk så vidt som jeg husker det, så opstod en... Måske fordi vi havde en tanke om, at vi skulle lave en udstilling på mit daværende galleri i Malmø, som hed Delphi.
Lige præcis.
Og jeg kan faktisk ikke rigtig huske, hvad omdrejningspunktet var andet, end at vi skulle have sådan en slags lille snit-workshop.
Lige præcis.
Det var sådan, at vi ville gerne snitte nogle figurer af træ.
Snitte og have det fedt med noget.
Ja, præcis. Hør nogle gange sagt det.
Ja.
Samtidig. Men jeg kan ikke rigtig huske, hvordan det kom sig, eller hvordan... noget som helst.
Det er forsvundet i tårerne også.
Ja, vi ville gerne have tjekket jo også, men altså internettet herude i Amager, det er så dårligt, så altså man kan ikke, så jo længere man kommer fra centerkilden, eller hvad man skal sige, så det internettet er dårligt, så vi har ikke kunne gå tilbage i vores korrespondance. Så men det måske er det også meget fedt at gætte sig frem til, og også noget vi også på forhånd har talt lidt om, det er, hvor meget vi faktisk gætter os frem til forskellige detaljer om den her musik. Fordi der ikke er nogen af os, der er klassisk skolede i det her overhovedet. Og det er faktisk bare for at sige, at vi aner ikke noget om det her, vi kommer til at sidde og snakke om. Men,
til gengæld så nyder vi det.
Ja, præcis.
Og har det fedt med det.
Ja.
Og... Og det er nok en af grundstenene for programmet i aften.
Så der er en enormt stor lytteglæde, selvom vi ikke kender så meget teknisk til noget af det, vi hører.
Men, præcis.
Og det har vi også talt om, måske kan være til vores fordel. Det er vi nok også nødt til at sige, når vi sidder for at lave et program om det. Så det er okay, men lad os sige, det er nogle ret grønne ører på den måde. Der er
fuldstændig. Vi kommer muligvis til at træde nogle kyndige folk over tæerne.
Ja.
Sige noget forkert, eller give et forkert årstal, eller sådan noget.
Ja.
Det skal man ikke tage så tungt.
Nej.
Musikken lyder stadigvæk helt overdrevet godt.
Helt vildt fedt. Ja.
Og nu sidder jeg lige og kigger på sådan en liste over, hvad vi skal starte med.
Mm.
Skal man starte fra toppen? Skal man starte friskt? Skal man starte blødt?
Jamen, det er da et godt spørgsmål. Det handler vel også meget om, hvad vi... Det kan måske også være noget med, hvordan vi kunne tænke os at præsentere hinanden for nogle numre eller sådan noget. Fordi det er jo ikke, fordi vi egentlig... Men vi kan også sige, at den her liste blev sammensat ved, at vi sendte hinanden numre på nettet, på Messenger måske eller sådan noget.
Ja.
Og så vi har egentlig ikke snakket om de her numre før. Vi har bare... Den nummer, sådan, tjek den her ud, den er fed.
Ja.
Så måske det er en meget, meget god intro for os begge, faktisk, at høre, hvad vi synes, hvis der er noget særligt at sætte på de her numre, som vi synes er fedt.
Det er en vildt god idé. Og jeg tror måske, jeg har fundet det perfekte
track. Ja, det er spændende. Okay,
fordi
klart.
Der står...
Okay, der har en fed titel også, yes.
John Sales og Der Hund. Og så står der German Guitar Music.
Ja, okay.
Hvad end det lige skal betyde.
Ja, ja, ja.
Så lad os...
Tysk guitarmusik.
Lad os sætte den på.
Det kan være mange og meget. Godt. Thank you. Det var da et skønt nummer, synes jeg, Claus.
Der var sådan lidt frisk stemning der, ja.
Ja.
Det kunne måske være et godt nummer at snitte til.
Ja, det tænker jeg måske. Snitte små hunde.
Ja, det passer
hund.
Perfekt
ja.
Til titlen.
En vundt lille hund.
Ja.
Ja. Jamen altså, så tænker jeg da bare, at jeg kører lidt videre i guitar-genren måske. Og det tænker jeg at gøre med det her nummer af komponisten Kapsberger, Johannes Hieronymus Kapsberger. Eller Kapsberger er det sikkert. Og det er John Lisseland, der spiller på det. Jeg kan i det hele taget, jeg tror, at jeg i det hele taget har en del nummer på listen, har Lisseland på sig.
Det er...
Men han er også bare god til at spille guitar. Ja. Her kommer han.
Thank you.
fantastisk.
Det er tjekkoerne. Eller jeg ved ikke, hvordan man siger det, men muligvis så.
Ja.
Ja.
Vi talte lige om, mens vi hørte det her track, om du ligesom så nogle billeder for dig.
Ja.
Hvor du lige nævnte
ja.
Rolf Lislevands...
ja. Strumming.
Strumming-teknik.
Ja, præcis.
Du vil ikke lige beskrive det der billede igen? Det var ret flot, synes jeg.
Men det er som om, at hans, der er sådan et rigtig flot klip, hvor han sidder og spiller en tarantella.
Ja.
Så jeg muligvis også tænker, at vi skal høre senere, fordi det er så... vi gætte på, det er de numre, jeg har sendt til dengang. Ja. Det kan vi jo også lige gøre som disclaimer, at... der er noget, der er gået lidt galt i vores listeopsamlings, altså arkivopsamling her, så vi gætter lidt på, hvad det er, jeg faktisk har tilføjet listen dengang. For vi kan ikke helt finde ud af det. Så vi går tilbage og kigger på, hvad for noget fed renaissancemusik har jeg måske hørt i den periode. Og det vil være nogle numre, jeg vil gætte på, jeg har hørt i den periode. Og, men det, jeg så ser for mig, det er, at der er en super fed video, hvor at, Rolf Lislevand, han spiller en tarantella, og hans højre hånd, ligesom, den bevægelse, der sker, er ligesom, på en måde alt for langsom og fattet og elegant til sådan, det her ekstremt hurtige siger det sådan. Det er ligesom, der sker en eller anden sådan, et eller andet sammenfald mellem, som ikke hænger sammen med det, jeg ser, og det, jeg hører i hvert fald.
Ja.
Så det ser jeg, kan jeg måske se, når jeg hører det, men ellers er det selv. Men tænker du på noget, når du... Eller sådan,
altså noget, jeg bare tænkte lige ved det her nummer var, også rigtig meget omkring instrumenteringen, og hvordan der er sådan en orgelstemme, der ligesom kommer ind, cirka midtvejs eller sådan noget, og så egentlig forsvinder et godt stykke tid igen, og så kommer ind igen, og så er der det her sådan hurtige cembalo-løb til sidst.
Ja.
Og hvordan det... ja, det er muligvis forkert, men følelsen ret moderne på en eller anden måde. Ja. Det der med, at der bare lige sådan stikker noget frem, og så egentlig forsvinder igen.
Ja.
Som man også meget bruger sådan mere ny musikproduktion, ikke? Til ligesom at holde et eller andet semikedeligt beat i gang. Så
drysser
man lidt noget forskelligt på. Som...
Er det sådan en trickster, eller sådan noget, der kommer ind og hæver det andet sted hen, eller sådan noget?
Eller bare lige sådan spejser det lidt om.
Ja, okay, nå.
Så det virkede bare meget moderne på en eller anden måde, synes jeg.
Okay, fedt. Jeg har ikke tænkt på det på den måde, men det er spændende at tænke videre over.
Og så var det jo bare helt sindssygt melodiøst, det der. Det var der. Det var virkelig en banger, der ville noget, altså.
Men det er også sådan en banger, hvor at ham Kapsberger, han har mærket sådan, okay, jeg har ramt et omkred, der bare spiller her. Hvad hvis jeg bare bliver ved med at spille det igen og igen og igen?
Jamen, det er rigtigt.
Og så kan der komme nogle lidt sådan forskellige sådan lidt mellemstykker og sådan noget, men lad os holde os til temaet.
Ja.
Og hvilket tema?
Lige præcis. Altså, når man nu har fundet guldklumpen,
Præcis.
Så skal den da også bare...
Jamen, bestemt. Lige med den.
Køres igennem.
Lige ved den list.
Ja.
Og der, noget af det, der måske også blev spændende ved det der nummer, var, at vi var lidt uenige om, hvad der spillede for et instrument midt i det hele. Vi var faktisk ikke rigtig...
Jamen, det var orgel. Der var også et bud på noget fløjtelignende på et tidspunkt.
Ja, præcis.
Det skal måske også siges, jeg har taget sådan en stor, flot, meget besværlig firkantet bog med af en, der hedder David Monroe, som er sådan en reenactment-musiker. Ja. Så vidt jeg har forstået. Nå, men den hedder altså Instruments of the Middle Ages and Renaissance.
Det er et super spændende billede, der er på forsiden. Jeg kan måske beskrive, at det ligner, at der har været en fed fest der for kammerorkestret. Ikke? Og de har haft papegøje med, og de har haft en beos der, og de har haft en tukan eddermuk med os. Men så har de bare smidt alt, hvad nordark og mandolin og kontrabas og... hele måde for at gå om til et bord og kigge i en bog.
Altså, hvad står der i den bog? Måske er det den her bog.
Godt nok et... men de kunne også, men noget der... Altså, langt med, og jeg tænker, okay.
Ja, jamen på sådan lille vinduer der.
Ja, noget der også er ret skønt... Eller jeg tænker, opbygningen af det her, det er jo selvfølgelig ikke tilfældigt, der er der et eller andet. Altså, det vil... tænkte først var måske, at det var sådan et godt naturmort, eller sådan noget, altså man kan se de der efterladenskaber, detritus efter en sådan fed fest, og så kan man se ude bagved, der er sådan en, der er ligesom et udkig til sådan en horisont, med et enormt frodigt skovlandskab. Ja, ja. Og så fra siden er der ligesom en, der stikker en trompet ud, og muligvis giver et trut, vi ved ikke. Men så er der det her forstyrrende element i baggrunden af dem, som sidder og læser, som jeg ikke kan få til at passe sammen med.
Nej, altså det må være helt usædvanligt spændende, det der står i den der
bog. Ja, det må det.
Men der er også for eksempel en, der står med en fløjte og en guitar, så det kan måske faktisk være, at det er det nye hit, hvor de lige skal tjekke.
Det er faktisk damerne, de er gået over for at spille for. Først så er de øvet sig fra papegøjerne og tukanerne.
Nu.
Og så er det damerne, der skal spilles for.
Helt sikkert.
Måske.
Måske.
Måske. Vi ved det ikke. Og hvorom alting gør.
Der, så har vi altså prøvet at konsultere den her bog.
Oraklet her.
For at se, om vi kunne...
Wow, det var altså det var et lille billede, der.
Der er
syv heste med